of Easter. It's a time when we celebrate the death, the burial, and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. That's what Easter is all about. And well, the message series was, again, not developed by me. I'd love to tell you I sat down and had this great idea to make this movie and write a sermon series on it. But it really was propagated by one man's story. His name is Lee Strobel. And it's actually based off of a book that he wrote. And the book was then, as most folks do, they turn into movies. And then they began to pull that apart and they made this sermon series. The same company did all three of them. And this all started as for his quest, his attempt to disprove the Christian faith. See, he was a one-time atheist. And he had this mission to save his wife from a newfound faith by disproving who Jesus was. And while we may want to boo that, it was really a quest that he wanted to understand truth. And I have to admire that, because anybody that's willing to go looking for truth, then you know what? Truth will ultimately find you. The question is are you willing to embrace that truth after you find it? So let me talk about where we've been, because where we've been is very important to where we're going. Remember, the first week of this series, we talked about those four sticking points of faith. The point at which you got the information, but there's just something in the way to keep you from going to that next step. And I hope you've noticed as we've gone through those video clips that they've fed into the series, he's kind of gone through these steps of, I can't believe. You know, what you're asking me to believe is impossible. I don't want to believe. Yeah, that was last week when the doctor gave him all the figures and the facts and all the medical opinions. And what did he say? Doc, you're not telling me what I want to hear. I don't want to believe what you're telling me because it makes my life complicated. I don't know what to believe. After all, I've got all of this information, and there's conflicting views and conflicting stories, and I just really don't know what to believe. And then you get to that point, and I think this is where a lot of our faith stops. I believe the stories. Isn't that enough? Isn't just the fact that I profess some head knowledge belief, isn't that enough? And this sermon today completely focuses on this point. Is my belief enough? Now, last week, we examined all of the evidence for who Jesus was. And went through some historical evidence, we went through some biblical evidence, and we laid out the idea that Jesus is exactly who he says he was. He was God incarnate. He was the Son of God. He was the Messiah. He was either that person or he was nobody. He is somebody that should have gone down in history as maybe one of the biggest liars or one of the biggest lunatics that ever was out there. Because you know what? Either he was exactly who he said he was, or we should all go play golf on Sunday mornings. Because it is all centered around this one person. I had a college Sunday school teacher one time. By the way, I don't play golf really, just so y'all know, unless you count putt-putt. I don't do the golf thing. Somehow walking up and down a hill in the heat, it just doesn't do it for me. Anyway, I had a college Sunday school teacher at one point that made a comment that at the moment he made it really bothered me. He said, the first century church had more in common with Waco, Texas than it does with the modern day church. And then he went on to explain. The reason that's the truth is because the people in Waco, by the way, that's a new TV series that's on now. They're actually trying to recap the events that happened in Waco. And there it is again. What is Microsoft doing to me again? Matt, it's the box over here. It says, remind me later. Remind me tomorrow. I already had them. I did this week. That one. There you go. They're trying to kill me. They're just trying to drive me nuts. Anyway, so we did that update last week, so now I got to figure out what they're complaining about again. So the idea behind Waco, Texas, it was all centered around a personality. It was centered around a guy named David Koresh, and he convinced all these people to follow him. Well, you do understand that's what Christianity started out as. It was centered around a personality. The personality of Jesus. So if Jesus isn't who he says he was, then this is just crazy talk. And so this is important that we understand this. But now that we've gone through these sticking points, now that we've kind of come to a conclusion of who Jesus is, the question now becomes is, what is truth? What is truth all about? And as we're heading into Easter and we're lining these up, you're saying, wow, he's just doing Easter sermons early. Yeah, this is another Easter sermon. It's one of those pieces that we usually connect with the resurrection. It's in John chapter 18, verses 33 through 38. It was too long for me to put on a slide, so if you have your copy of God's Word, You can start turning that way. There's one in the pew rack in front of you. But let me read to you this story, very familiar story, Jesus with Pontius Pilate. John chapter 18, verses 33 through 38. So Pilate entered his headquarters again and called Jesus and said to him, "Are you the King of the Jews?" Jesus answered, "Do you say this of your own accord, or do others say it to you about me?" Pilate answered, "Am I a Jew? Your own nation and chief priests have delivered you over to me. What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would have been fighting that I may not be delivered over to the Jews. But my kingdom," is from another world," he answered. Then Pilate said, "So you are a king?" Jesus answered, "So you say I am a king. For this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I have come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice." Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" After he said this, he went back outside to the Jews and told them, "I find no guilt in him." Now, you have to understand that like Strobel, Pilate was trying to figure out the truth behind Jesus. But they had very different motives. As I explained to you, Strobel's motives was the fact that he was trying to disprove Christianity. At the point Pilate is talking to Jesus, Christianity does not exist. He's simply trying to find out, is Jesus guilty of the crime he's been accused of, and that is treason against the Roman government, because of his claim of being a king. Because if he is a king, then you understand we're living in Roman times, and there is only one king in the Roman Empire, and that would be Caesar. And so if you were claiming to be a king, then absolutely, positively, they would have executed you via crucifixion to prove a point that nobody stands as king except for Caesar. So this conversation that Pilate is having, he's not having a spiritual conversation. He's not trying to figure out if Jesus is a Messiah. He's not trying to figure out if he's sinned and whether or not he needs to be forgiven. He's simply trying to get to the truth of the matter. Are you a king? Because I have to pronounce my guilt, my verdict, based on what you tell me. Are you a king? That's what they've accused you of. And I guess Jesus kind of plays a little tongue-in-cheek game with Pilate, because he never gives him a straight answer. He gives him lots of answers, but never the answer that he wants to get. And so when we begin this, it becomes to different conclusions that Strobel and Pilate will come to. But what I want to do right now is I want to go through that conversation. I want to go through the conversation that Pilate is having there with Jesus, and I want to ask the right questions. See, Pilate had the right questions. He just wasn't willing to listen to the right answers. So I want to re-ask the questions, and as we re-ask the questions, I want to re-catch Jesus' answer into an application of how you and I are supposed to figure out how do we embrace truth. So this is a very simple sermon outline. It's just the questions, nothing but the questions. And the first question is, are you the King of the Jews? Now, keep in mind what he's doing. He's just restating the charge. They said he was a king, and so I have to figure out, are you a king? Because if you answer affirmative, I'm done. I can go home. I can have dinner early. We're all cool. It's all good. I can sign the execution papers. We are done for the day. Problem solved. So this was a simple yes or no question, wasn't it? Jesus was just supposed to say yes or no. I mean, we've been in courts of law before. You're just supposed to ask the question that was asked you. And so, but Jesus kind of gives him this answer. He says, "Do you say this of your own accord, or did others say it to you about me?" So Jesus immediately begins to go into Pilate on a spiritual sense. He wants to know almost that same question that Jesus was asking his disciples last week, and that is, who does the world say I am? Who do you say I am? And he wants to know at this point, is this your belief, or is it just what you heard about me? Look at me. Here I am. I have no armies. I have no castle. I have no horse. I don't even own a home. I don't even own a pillow. So how on earth am I supposed to be a king? So you're telling me that you want to know if I'm a king. I want to know from you, Pilate, do you believe I'm a king? Look at me. Do you believe it? Or is it that you just heard all of the hullabaloo and you've heard all of the cheers and the jeers and you saw when I entered into Jerusalem and they bowed down before me and they laid out the palm branches and they stretched out the cloth. Maybe you heard that story, or maybe you heard the story that I was healing people. Maybe you heard the story that the Jews, that the priests and the Pharisees were telling you that I claim to be a king. But I don't know, what did you hear that made you think I'm a king? Now, it's interesting, because Jesus answers the question with the question. By the way, that is the most obnoxious thing in the universe to me. I absolutely hate to ask a question. Sometimes, and it doesn't happen often, I will be looking for my keys. And I look at my wife and I say, have you seen my keys? And you know she inevitably says, well, where'd you leave them? Well, if I knew that, I wouldn't be looking for my keys. I would have my keys. And me answering my question with a question, it frustrates me. But here it is, Jesus has answered this question. He says, hey, look, do you believe I'm a king, or is it just you just recanting what people have told you? So Pilate comes back, and he says, you know what? He makes it very clear. I am not a Jew. In other words, Jesus, I'm not into this thing that you're doing, this game you're playing, this religious little back and forth that's going between you and the Pharisees. I'm not interested in the religious part of this. You have to understand that I am not a Jew. But you also need to understand, Jesus, your own nation and chief priests have delivered you over to me. I didn't bring you here on these charges. You know what? You were just some person out on the hillside and you were spouting all these good stories and all this kind of stuff. I didn't bring you here. So then Pilate asks another question. What have you done? Now, I'm very familiar with this question because I get asked it at least once a week at work. So what have you done this week? What is it that you've accomplished? We call them status reports. I absolutely hate doing status reports too. But they call them status reports. They want to know, what did you do? You had a set number of hours that we purchased from you this week, and the week is up, and we want to know, how did you spend my hours that I bought from you? And so what Pilate is actually asking Jesus is, hey, look, what have you done? What did you do to make your own nation, to make your people, to make the Jews so infuriated at you that they would bring you here before me, somebody that is not part of your nation, and they would say, please execute our king. You realize that's what they were saying. We're ratting out our king. Here he is, tack him to a cross and crucify him. That's what they were saying. And so Pilate wants to know, Jesus, what did you do? And man, what a great lesson Jesus could have taught. He could have broken into some wonderful story and given a nice five-point outline of all the wonderful things that he had done. This was the point at which Jesus could have saved his life, because he could have said, Pilate, you got anybody sick? Bring them in here. I'll show you what I can do. I can heal anybody that's sick. I can bring people. You got somebody that's dead? Bring them in here. I'll bring them back to life for you. I could have put on a really good show for you, but Jesus doesn't do any of those things. See, he answers the question this way. My kingdom. Now, that's important, because if you have a kingdom, you must be a what? A king. So Pilate now catches in when, as soon as Jesus says those words, his ears perk up like a hound dog out hunting. Just like, oh, look, okay, here we go. Here's my confession I need. My kingdom is not of this world. I'm sure Pilate, oh, man, you got to be kidding. He's a crazy man. He's talking about alien life. He's talking about other planets. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would have been fighting that I may not be delivered over to the Jews. But my kingdom is not from the world. Now, I want you to notice he changed the word there at the end in the translation. He starts out, it's not from this world. Then he ends up, it's not from the world. Do you get it? It's not that it's not just part of this world. I'm not talking about I'm a person that's talking I'm from another planet. I'm not talking that, you know, I got here on a spaceship, and I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about what you're looking for, Pilate. This kingdom that you're looking for, I am not saying the Jews, because if he was the king of the Jews, where would his kingdom be? Israel. Well, the last time I checked, Israel is a spot on the map. They taught me this in geography. And therefore, Israel would have been a place in this world. So at this point, now Pilate's got a problem because he did claim to be a king because he said, I have a kingdom. But he also did not claim to be the king of the Jews because guess what? He's not saying I'm over top of Israel. And Jesus is playing this little game perfectly with Pilate because what he's really telling him, this is not about what I have done, but what I'm here to do. Pilate, I am not sitting here today because I have broken some law. Pilate, I am not sitting here today because I've committed treason. I am not sitting here today because I have interest in Caesar's seat on the throne. I am not here because of what I have done. I am here because of what I'm here to do. See, Jesus understands the long game. He gets it. He understands that this is just the next step in the process because the only way he's ever going to be able to be crucified on a cross is the government has to find him guilty. He understands this is just part of the plan. Now, honestly, I would not like this plan if I'm Jesus, but he is playing the part that he needs to play because he understands what he's here to do. He's here to give his life as a ransom for many. And so he asked Pilate, here because of what I need to do. Now, if I was Pilate, I think I would have probably wanted to go into the, well, where is your kingdom? You know, what are you here for? I would have asked a few more questions, but just so you know, you can just kind of tell Pilate's not really taking Jesus serious because he only centers in on one statement Jesus made there. What did he center in on? Kingdom. Because his next question is, so you are a king. Again, Pilate's thinking going home, get dinner, pounding the gavel, world is all done, I'm all good, I've got my conviction, we're going to have our execution, the Jews will be happy, the world will be happy, everybody gets to be happy except for the man that's going to get tacked to the cross, it's all good. So he centers in on that one claim that Jesus said, my kingdom. Because now he just wants, all he wants him to say is, yes, I'm a king. Because again, he's done. He's accomplished his goal. So he asked him point blank, so you are a king. And Jesus just gives him the most frustrating answer that you can ever give somebody. You say that I'm a king. Oh my gosh. Did Pilate ever say he was a king? No. But he says, you say I'm a king. For this purpose I was born. And for this purpose I have come into the world to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice. So now Jesus is turning the whole thing around. You see, Pilate is trying to convince Jesus that he's a king to get him to basically condemn himself. And now all of a sudden, Jesus is throwing out a word that interests Pilate very much. Truth. And he throws it out in such a way that, again, Pilate is paying really close attention. But the application is, I am only your king if you believe the truth. Pilate, I am only the king if you say I am. Now, here's the problem. If Pilate pronounces Jesus king, not as in a treasonous way, but as I'm going to follow him, you know what Pilate's now guilty of? Treason. So he gets to hang on a cross right next to Jesus. So Pilate, only if you, Pilate, if you personally accept the fact that I am a king, that is the only point at which I am a king. So now the only way Pilate can condemn Jesus is to acknowledge that he's a king, and back and forth we go. And I can just see the little top of Pilate's head getting red, maybe even his ears, and that smile, that little smile that he had, that smirk, and we asked his questions, it's probably gone, and he's probably got that scowl on his face, and you know, maybe even a few drops of sweat coming on his forehead because he's kind of like, I don't know what to do with this. But he asks another question. And he asks them probably the most important question that we ever need to hear. What is truth? Of all the things that Jesus said, Pilate picked up on this word. Fine, Jesus, you say if I believe the truth, you just tell me the truth. What is the truth? You say that you want me to follow the truth? Let me hear it. The conversation with Pilate is recorded in all three Gospels, but did you know only John records this particular question? What is truth? Interesting enough to know, there is no scriptural response to Pilate whatsoever. The question never got answered. I don't know why. Maybe when Pilate asked it, he got up and he stormed out of the room because he's like, what is truth? And he just stormed out. Maybe he asked it and Jesus just said, I'm like, really? Do you really want this answer? Maybe there was a conversation that never got recorded for some reason or another because it was for Pilate's ears only. I don't know why Scripture never let Jesus answer and define the word truth, because it would make my job so much easier. If Jesus had defined what truth is and I could sit down here and give you a 5-point outline about what truth is, oh my gosh, it would make my life so much easier. But he kind of leaves it open because at this point, the conversation ends. And we move on. Pilate goes out. But you do understand, Pilate has come to some conclusions about who Jesus is. And the funny thing is, they're the same conclusions that many of us are easily able to come to. And here is the first conclusion. Jesus was amazing. This is what it says in Matthew chapter 27, verses 11 through 14. Now Jesus stood up before the governor, and the governor asked him, are you the king of the Jews? Jesus said, you have said so. But when he accused the chief priests and the elders, he gave no answer. Then Pilate said to him, do you not hear how many things they testify against you? But he gave no answer, not even to a single charge. So the governor was greatly amazed. See, this was a point at which the first conversation that Pilate had with Jesus, as he's sitting there watching him, everybody else is grilling him, and Jesus refuses to mount a defense. I mean, because if you're going to be accused of treason, I just want to let you know something. If they're going to accuse me of something that has the death penalty attached to it, and I'm an innocent person, I'm going to make as many arguments as I possibly can to convince you I didn't do what you said. But Jesus made none. And this amazed Pilate, but this amazement was not like he gave some great performance. Pilate was not amazed at Jesus because of his wisdom and his knowledge. He was not amazed because he was awestruck. He didn't look at him and say, wow, this guy is really cool. This guy is really awesome. And I really want to know more about this guy. He did not look at him that way. When it says Pilate was amazed, it's because, guess what? This was amazing because he did not understand. He didn't understand why Jesus was doing it the way he was doing it. Why not just answer the charges? If you're not a king, just say no, I let you go. Just say that it's not me. Just say I didn't do it. I mean, this isn't like the American court system where there's a jury and they're going to have to go back and deliberate. What Pilate said went. If Pilate had walked out those doors and said, guess what? He's not going to get executed. I sent him home. There's nothing the Jews can do about it. There's no appeals court. There's no way it's going to change. And so Pilate was amazed because he just did not understand why Jesus was taking this approach. Pilate came to another very important conclusion. Jesus was not guilty. Luke chapter 23, verse 5, then Pilate said to the chief priests and the crowds, I find no guilt in this man. Now understand the way that he did not say this man is not guilty. He says, I find no guilt. I can't even find a parking ticket on him. I can't find anything on him. Whatever you said, he's not saying he's a king. He never professed to be a king to me. I even asked him the question point blank, and you know what? He is completely innocent of the charges you bring against him. That's an impressive statement. I mean, Pilate was a known a government official that had done thousands of these interviews. He had convicted lots of men and put them to death. And now he's going out here and he's looking at this angry mob and saying, I can't find it. I've asked all the questions that I know to ask, and he's not saying he's a king to me. I mean, he didn't deny it, but he didn't confess to it, but I don't see what you're saying, because after all, there's no castle, there's no army. Y'all say he's the king of the Jews, but you guys are the Jews and you guys don't like him. So obviously, if he's a king, he's not a very good one. And so he pronounces him innocent. And well, we know what that should have meant. I mean, again, we've watched enough trial shows, right? The gavel bangs. They say not guilty. The prosecution hears the verdict And well, the prosecution kind of bristles because they're sure an innocent man, a guilty man, is going free. The defense attorneys are all giving each other high fives because they got the non-guilty verdict, and he's gonna go out there, and their client's gonna go free. I mean, innocent means that you don't have to pay a price, right? Well, that's kind of the point behind this story, because this is what did happen. John chapter 18, verses 39 through 40. But you have a custom. Now this is Pilate finishing his statement, "I have found no guilt." And now he's looking at the Jews. Pilate's trying to find a way out of this. "But you have a custom that I should release one man for you at Passover." So this was something that had gone on for years, and one person that was in the Roman prison that was sentenced to death was going to be released, and so they're going to give him a choice. "So do you want me to release the King of the Jews," air quotes, and they cried out, "Not this man, but Barabbas." Now, Barabbas was a robber. So he goes out there and he now gives the people a choice. You can take a man that is a known criminal that has stolen from you and caused riots among you and caused death among you. You can take him, or you can take Jesus and give him a pass. And of course, Pilate thinks, "I've got this figured out," because you know who they're supposed to take, right? Who would you take? Would you take the convicted murderer and the robber, or would you just let the crazy man go free? I think I would at least like to deal with the crazy man, because we know what the convicted robber and the murderer is going to do. He's just going to kill and rob again. But that's not what the crowd did. It says they cried out, "Give us Barabbas! Crucify Jesus!" Man, that's important to note. You see, the innocent was condemned, so the guilty went free. Boy, there's a whole big sermon right there, isn't it? The innocent person was condemned so that the sinner could walk free. Pilate did not believe Jesus guilty of treason, but neither did he believe him to be the Messiah. He didn't accept him as the truth. He didn't accept him for what he was. He did not accept that there was another kingdom. There was a bigger picture than just this world. Instead, Jesus became a pawn in his political game. Isn't that kind of sad? I mean, Pilate had it right there in front of him. He had the creator of the world, the Son of God, right there in front of him. He could have asked him any question he wanted to. And these are the questions he chose to ask. And because of the way he phrased the questions, Jesus would be executed. Now, keep in mind, Pilate is not marching to his plan. He is marching to God's plan. This was the plan for Jesus to be executed. Pilate's conclusion led to that part of the plan coming true. But I want to switch gears for a moment. And I want to talk about Mr. Strobel's conclusion when he finally came face to face with the truth.
When you became a Christian, I freaked out. I mean, yeah, I was scared. And I felt like that I needed to save you. And so I decided to set out to prove this was all a big con. And so that's what I've been doing all this time. I just had to prove this whole thing wrong. But I couldn't. The evidence for your faith, it's more overwhelming than I could have ever imagined. But it wasn't just the evidence, okay? It was you. You never stopped loving me. You never gave up on me. And I think because of that, God didn't either.
Oh. What? I mean, I don't think God gave up on you either, but what are you saying?
I can't even fathom that I'm gonna say this words out loud. I believe. I do.
But as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become children of God. Mm-hmm. To those who believe in his name.
And what does that mean?
That means believe plus receive equals become.
Okay, so then how do I receive? What's the protocol for that?
There's no wrong way or right way, just you talk to God.
Mm-hmm.
You tell him your heart.
Mm-hmm. And we do that right now. I mean, shouldn't we go to church?
Right here, right now. This is church.
Okay. Cannot ignore the evidence. And I don't know everything. I never will know everything. But I know enough. And I believe it. I believe you. And I'm sorry for what I've put my wife through, what I've put my family through, but I believe you're real, and I don't know what comes next. I don't know what it means. I just know that I want whatever's next. I want that. So let's do that.
Obviously, the conclusions are different because we're doing this study. Strobel came down to the point that he had all the evidence. He believed, like we heard in Proverbs chapter 2, verses 3 and 5, yes, if you call on the insight and raise your voice for understanding, if you seek it like silver and search it for like a hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. He understood the words of Matthew chapter 6, verse 33, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all of these things will be added to you. He understood Matthew chapter 7, verse 7. Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and it will be opened to you. He understood. Believe plus receive equals become. I absolutely love the honest prayer that they put into that movie, that it wasn't some canned, repeat after me, like we're doing wedding vows kind of prayer. I love the fact that he still had his doubts. He didn't know that he understood it all. He didn't understand how you feed 5,000 people with fishes and bread. He didn't understand how they parted the Red Sea. He couldn't scientifically prove whether or not the sun stood still in the sun in the middle of the sky for a day. He didn't ask for any of that. Did he believe all of that at that point? Probably not. You know what he did believe? The truth of Jesus. He believed in the fact that Jesus was exactly who he said he was. But I do want to make sure you understand that belief is not enough. That's only half the equation. There is this idea that as she read that scripture, those who receive, those who are willing to open their lives and bring that truth into their life and allow it to filter into their life each and every day and percolate through their life and be demonstrated in their life, those are the ones who become. So, as we begin to close up the sermon, let me ask you this question. How will you embrace the truth? What are you going to do with the facts that you got? Are you going to do it like Pilate did and you just ask the questions that you just think you want the answers to just because you're looking for the flaws so that you can make a pronouncement of judgment and walk out and feel that, well, I don't have any reason to do this anymore? Is that how you're going to embrace truth? Or are you going to do it the way that Strobel said in that clip? I love it. The evidence for your faith was so overwhelming that I just can't deny it. Now, I do not want you to miss the fact that it did not begin with the information. It began with observing somebody else's faith. That's next week's sermon. We'll talk about that. But it absolutely was important that he got to the fact of what is truth. And Strobel decided the only logical way to embrace truth was to surrender to God. Believe plus receive equals become. And I am so happy he made that decision, but you know what? That is his decision. Now the question is, what is yours? Got all of the facts and the information. We gave you everything you need to understand what it means to be a follower of Christ. All it means is that you're accepting Jesus as who he is, as your personal Lord and Savior. You understand that you realize that you need something else to bridge that gap between you and God. If you believe that, are you ready to take that next step and receive it? This is about as a straightforward gospel message as I'll ever give in a church. You know what? If you're here today and you just have a belief, you've never taken that next step. You've never came forward and you've surrendered your life. You've never followed him in baptism. You've never done the things to receive Christ. I made an analogy, and we'll take it to a car instead of a house, because I can't afford to give cars away either. If I go out and I bought you a car, and I brought that car home to you, and I put that car in your driveway, and I said, this is your car. Here's the keys. Here's the title, signed over, signed, sealed, deliver your car. And you know what? You can go into the DMV and you can pay the price and you can have that title put in your name and you can have the keys put on your key ring and you can go out there and you can pay the taxes on that car and you can wash that car and you can look at that car and you can bring your friends down the street and say, look, this is my car. But you know when the car is yours? When you get in it and you drive it. When you put the keys in the ignition, you put the car in the gear and you push on the gas pedal. Now it's your car. Believing it's your car only means that you'll put that car in action in your life. This is the same thing. Believing who he is, great. I'm asking you, are you ready to go the next step and let him in the car with you and allow him to drive your life? That's an important step for you to understand.